Imagine 20 professional music teachers of different geographical, instrument, and experience levels all enter a classroom.
My aim tonight is to give you a little.
They're here to learn from group class expert Carrie Beth Hockett. The teachers confidently remove their instruments, quietly greet their colleagues, and respectfully wait instruction. After some warm-ups and games where you never knew that counting to eight in new patterns could be so difficult, Carrie asks for volunteers to create their own exercises. And she just waits, in silence, while everyone looks at each other. One of the most striking things in these classes is the sense of time and space, the awareness gained by listening to every member of the group. When people start sharing ideas, inventing games, trying each other's creations, an almost visible web of relationships is created in the room. These days, so much of socializing is based on screens. So, how is this in-person and engaged community created so instantly? You're listening to Building Noble Hearts, a production of the Suzuki Association of the Americas. I'm Margaret Watts Romney. Here, we take a look at the learning environments in which children, parents, and teachers gain new knowledge and are also encouraged to become fine individuals. We'll talk with members of the Suzuki music community inspired by humanitarian violinist Shinichi Suzuki and see themes of good teaching everywhere, such as listening, community, creativity, and more. This week, we're featuring Carrie Beth Hockett, a cellist, teacher at the Colburn School in Los Angeles, outgoing board member for the Suzuki Association of the Americas, and incoming board member for the International Suzuki Association. But the way most people know her in the Suzuki teaching community is through her group class workshops. Hundreds of teachers have had the pleasure to join her classes, which play around with musical skills like counting to eight, playing Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, or a one-octave scale. But these games have such unique variations that even professional musicians flounder. As I interviewed Carrie, it was clear she has been creating live, in-person, and engaged communal spaces even from a young age in Ithaca, New York.
I'm the youngest of five children, and my father, though not a professional musician, really was in his heart and soul a musician. He was a composer, and he played the flute, and he loved chamber music, so he had a huge collection of LPs, and there was chamber music playing in the home all the time. And my older siblings all played wind instruments, but when it came time for me to start, I wanted to be different, so friends of the family had a viola and a cello they were willing to give to us, and I chose the cello and started at about age seven, I believe. I remember that the first teacher I studied with tried to introduce vibrato in the fourth lesson, and it made me really nervous, and I told my parents so. Of course, my parents weren't in the lessons with me at that point, and so we changed to another teacher, and I must have been hard to handle. I went through several teachers in the first few years. But the memory I have from my early days playing the cello is that my father was not an excellent pianist, but he could manage a little piano playing, and I loved to play with him accompanying me, and I used to make regular trips to the local music store and scour the boxes of cello music and find things that I thought that he and I could play together, and I'd go up to the front desk and give him this huge stack of music and say, put it on my father's bill, and walk out of the store with it. My recollection is we spent hours a day playing cello and piano together. I'm sure it wasn't as long as I think it was, but it's something I remember always being eager to do.
Carrie built on those formative years of playing and sharing music with her father by studying at Eastman School of Music, but it wasn't until after earning her degree in music and returning to Ithaca that she was introduced to Suzuki teaching. Introduced not by other teachers, but by demand from an existing community of families. Luckily, these days, teachers with Suzuki training are abundant and can be found almost anywhere through the Suzuki Association of the Americas website. But in Carrie's early teaching days, the Suzuki teaching movement was just getting started. I asked her what initially drew her to Suzuki teaching, what she was intrigued by.
Well, I don't know that I was drawn to it or intrigued by it. What happened, actually, was that I decided after I finished Eastman to move back to Ithaca. And at the same time that I moved back, there were two Suzuki cello teachers in town who were moving away. So they sort of created this vacuum that someone needed to fill. So when I got back to town, I had people calling me and asking if I would take their kids who had started with these Suzuki teachers. And my answer was always, well, I'm happy to give it a try, but I must tell you that I'm not a Suzuki teacher. I haven't had any training and I don't know anything about it. So if you understand that's the situation, I'm happy to work with your kids. One of the earliest experiences I had was with a woman who called and said she had a 5-year-old son who was playing. And so I made my usual claim about not being an experienced Suzuki teacher. Also told her I'd never worked with anybody that young, but I said I would be happy to give it a try. So the next week, she showed up at my house with this 5-year-old son of hers with 4 younger siblings in tow.
Oh,
and when I opened the door, I thought, oh no, this is a mistake. And was tempted to say, I'm sorry, you have the wrong house, and close the door on them. But I didn't do that. I welcomed them in and I showed them to the room where I was going to be giving the lesson. And she proceeded to settle these little kids in the corner of the room and give them something to occupy themselves with. Well, her son, the cellist, took his cello out by himself, you know, and sat down and waited for me to give him the lesson. And I was so sort of overwhelmed by this whole operation that already I was curious. But then I asked him to play. I said, what would you like to play? And he said, I'll play Allegro by Suzuki. And I said, okay, go ahead. And he did. And it was just so absolutely perfect in every way that all I could say when he finished was, well, what else do you have to play? Which was not my usual experience in learning or teaching. You know, most of my experience in learning and teaching was kind of search and destroy. You play something and the teacher finds things to pick holes in. You know, and you find what's wrong and you fix it. And this, you know, this didn't lend itself to that kind of teaching. We just had to go on and figure out what came next and what he should learn next. So that was one of the early experiences that really intrigued me and made me wonder, how can this happen? How can this be happening? I'm such a sort of maverick, really, at heart. I'm so rebellious that I wasn't going to be persuaded by any colleagues to start by studying Suzuki teaching and then do it. You know, I think for me it had to be this way, that someone who had had a successful experience came to me and converted me. I saw the result, absolutely.
Carrie saw sort of the tip of the iceberg of Suzuki teaching with this family. In this one child, she saw excellence, responsibility, patience, and openness. She knew that excellent family dynamics were part of the equation, but she also saw the quality of teaching this student had experienced. This was a window into the larger community of Suzuki teaching. She saw results. The first Suzuki community Carrie joined included Sandy Rooning, Yvonne Tate, and Marilyn Kessler, all excellent string teachers who were some of the first in the United States to use Suzuki teaching ideas and were strong advocates for spreading the ideas to other teachers. Carrie's rebellious spirit pushed against the idea at first of joining this new Suzuki teaching movement. But again, it was her personal connections with people, her students, her community, that made a difference.
Once I was teaching at ITE, Sandy Rooning invited me to teach chamber music at the Institute in the summer. And that was a really important experience because Yvonne Tate and Marilyn Kessler and some of these pioneers were there teaching cello and essentially took me under their wing and said, we need you, Carrie. You know, we need more teachers who are willing to help us do this work. And that's sort of why I came around and allowed myself to be labeled. It's sort of principles from the Suzuki approach that really govern everything that I do. The attitude I take into the room when I'm teaching, my attitude towards the kids, towards their parents, towards my colleagues, it's all based on that. I mean, yesterday I went to my cello ensemble and I just sort of went into the class and the energy that the kids brought to it, you know, I felt revived because they're very positive and they're interested and they're enthusiastic, they like each other, they support each other, they respect each other, and I thought, it doesn't get much better than this, you know? There's not many things I'd rather be doing.
3 years ago, Carrie Beth Hockett was invited to join the Suzuki Association of the Americas board, a significant commitment of time and energy. I asked her why, with all she had on her plate. Why did she accept? She spoke of the gratitude and admiration she had for the individuals she knew and the professional network she saw when she attended conferences.
I was very inspired by speakers at the conference, but even not the special guest speakers, but just the sessions given by colleagues. There was a really rising level of professionalism, of inspiring thinking. But I remember anybody I would sit down and talk to just feeling so inspired by how deep thinking they were, you know, how involved they were in what they were doing, how experienced they were. I just thought, it's amazing to have so many wonderful, experienced, dedicated teachers here in one place.
And that then inspired you to want to join?
Yes, to try to serve the SAA. I was really inspired by what I saw.
Recently, because of her service on the Suzuki Association of the Americas board and her international experience from teaching for 18 years in London, Carrie Beth Hockett was invited to serve on the International Suzuki Association board. She's excited about connecting with the global Suzuki community.
I think once I have a better understanding, then I'll be in a position to help other people have a better understanding, because I think that we waste a lot of energy criticizing things without sufficient information. You know, it's a kind of modern problem that information is so readily accessible that we read something for 2 minutes and then we're an expert. And I just don't think that's right. I think we need more time. We need to live with things for longer to really understand them. We have to be more open-minded. We have to look deeper when other people have different points of view than we do. We have to try to understand why, not just say, well, I disagree with you.
I've seen you teach in your creative group class workshops, and it seems like it's similar skills and strengths that you're talking about with the ISA, of slowing down, hearing what's being said, seeing what is called for the next step. Does that ring true for you?
I think so. I think I had a kind of epiphany after one of our board meetings. This epiphany I came away with from this meeting was that actually we placed much too much value in answers. It's that the questions that are really the interesting thing, you know? And so if one can get to a point where you're not like a school child who has to have answers for the questions to pass the test, but you're a grown-up, you're a fully formed person who is happy to have questions just lead to more questions. Because that's what happens. Questions just lead to more questions. Then you have to decide questions are your friends, not your enemies.
My conversation with Carrie Beth Hockett showed that it's questions which draw us together and create a community.
asking for things as well as about things. Asking for a father to play with you, for new music, asking for permission to be imperfect with a new student, asking for time with another person. We can also ask about things. What is happening here? What is it that makes a Suzuki teacher? How does this organization work? And what is needed here? The act of asking for things can connect us to others. By first asking and then leaving an open space to listen for the answers, we can build a network to support ourselves and our students in our growth towards excellence. Join us in our next episodes as we continue to explore the ways we, as parents and teachers, create rich learning environments that encourage growth in our students and perhaps fuel our own transformation as well. Thanks for listening to Building Noble Hearts, a production of the Suzuki Association of the Americas. I'm Margaret Watts Romney. Our theme music, Sun Up, is composed by Stephen Katz and Derek Snyder and performed by the Snyder Cello Army. We also heard selections from Solos for Young Cellists arranged by Carrie Cheney, Robin Hood Changes His Oil written by Gideon Freudman performed by the Alaska Cello Intensive, and Beethoven String Quartet No. 3 performed by the Borromeo String Quartet. Links to all music selections can be found on our website, suzukiassociation.org. We receive significant and invaluable production assistance from Methuselah Podcast Productions. If you like what you heard today, tell someone about it. We'll see you next time.